This is Signal 337, the podcast for the innately curious and creative. Hey friends, this is Tim McKenna, and this is another episode of Signal 337. So every morning during the work week, I bring my son downstairs, and usually he has about 15 to 20 minutes between once he's awake and all dressed and before we have to go to daycare. So he's got 15, 20 minutes, and he usually spends that eating his snack and either watching some god-awful blippy YouTube videos, or he likes to listen to songs. And he's a funny guy because he knows that I could play the music videos on YouTube, but he also knows that if he yells at the Amazon Echo, that it could play some songs for him as well. Very often in the evenings, he will want to play some songs and dance around the living room, and we usually ask the Amazon Echo to play different stuff from Spotify. It's really interesting to see my son interact with an Amazon Echo because he doesn't know anything differently. He knows that if he goes over and yells at it, it will probably do something. However, since he is just a little over 2 years old, he hasn't quite grasped how to actually ask it to play stuff for him. He just knows that if he yells loudly at it, it might do something. And then he gets mad and yells at me because he wants to hear a song. It's funny to see my son completely accept this as the norm of how we play some music. On the flip side, my mom, who is, let's see, if I'm 36, she's in an age where I really shouldn't be sharing her age publicly for the fear of her kicking my ass. So let's just say she's older than me. And my mom absolutely can't stand and can't figure out the Amazon Echo. She just didn't grow up with this tool at all and sees it more of a luxury and a toy more than something that could be helpful. She's not aware of the different tools and interactions and integrations you can add to the Amazon Echo so that she can actually find some more value out of it. The most that she gets to use it is basically telling it to turn it down whenever my dad starts yelling at it to play certain songs over and over again. So it's interesting to see two different people on opposite ends of the technology acceptance spectrum, really. One who knows and thinks that this is just part of life, and one who's, this is a luxury, we don't really need this, it's a nice to have, but not a necessity. And they both understand the basic, underpinnings of how this thing works, but their understanding and trust of these devices completely different. And that sparked an idea of what I'd like to talk about today. As designers, we've had a love-hate relationship with tools. It's one of the pastimes that designers love to complain about and have discussions about and arguments and debates about. There's certain tools destroying design, there's certain tools helping design. And I'm going to talk about one that I think is going to be incredibly helpful for us. If we aren't already using it, we will be using it more in the future. And that is artificial intelligence-based tools. Now, I know that we could get into a huge discussion on artificial intelligence, and instantly a lot of people start thinking of Terminator and The Matrix and smart devices that are spying on you. There's a whole lot to unwrap with artificial intelligence. But I think that when you hear artificial intelligence, there's just so much stuff built around it that a lot of people don't understand other areas that make up the field of artificial intelligence that we use a lot and could be super helpful. And that's what I want to talk about today is artificial intelligence, based tools, machine learning tools more appropriately, that I feel are going to help designers grow in the next 5 years or so. So with that, let's begin. 2019, I went to the Generate conference in New York, and there was a speaker talking about AI going to be a design tool in the future. and really started talking about what artificial intelligence is, and more specifically around machine learning algorithms, and understanding that these are new tools that are going to be available to us because we are going to move more into the space of algorithms and understanding massive amounts of data and computational design. For some of the people in the audience, they looked at the speaker like he was a crazy person. And I thought, wow, this is an exciting time for us to even be considering having tools that utilize machine learning. In fact, right now, as I am doing this episode, I am using a tool called Descript that is live transcribing everything that I'm saying in real time. And it's doing a pretty damn good job. It was trained on my voice. I read a script for 30 minutes about the animal kingdom. And basically, I read this so it could understand my inflection, where I enunciate, where I'm lazy, how I trail off, how my voice changes in different areas. It understands the context of how I put together my sentences and how I put together my phrases. So what's interesting about this tool is beyond the fact that it's live transcribing and doing a pretty good job, what's great is that instead of having to go into the waveform and find a particular area where I fucked up saying something, this does a pretty good job of capturing the areas that I've messed up, and I can actually go into the text file and play it from the text, and I can live edit the text and overdub certain sections with text without having to re-record that section. And because it was trained on my voice, it is a pretty damn good idea of how I would say a certain thing in this one phrase. If I was to type in a certain phrase, it would do a pretty good job of catching how I would actually sound. And this is machine learning. This is powerful. This is a very low level of machine learning, and I can have this thing retrain over and over again on my voice. And the more that Descript is hearing me talk and getting an understanding of how I put my phrases and how I actually say things, it's going to get better with the overdubbing over time. And this is actually making my whole editing process way faster. Instead of having to, like I said, go into a waveform and find all of those mistakes, I can actually go through the entire text file and find all of the ums and ahs and filler words that would actually be a pain in the ass for me to edit otherwise. This is an incredibly powerful tool that I'm using for podcasting. Now, where are we going to go with these ideas with design tools? Where can this help us here? I think that there are going to be some amazing design tools that are going to start leveraging machine learning and artificial intelligence in ways that is going to be borderline scary for a lot of folks. A while back, I saw a concept of a Figma plugin where you would type into a text input, like, I want a green circle with a red stroke that's 10 pixels on the outside. And that was just written, and then the plugin actually created the circle with the stroke. And it just understood the text and interpolated that into a command and actually created something on the screen. Can you imagine being able to design interfaces using text or even just vocalizing it and having it capture that? That'd be a game changer. A huge game changer for us. And that would be incredibly helpful as a tool for us to move more quickly, more efficiently. Can you imagine how someone could create their own project inside of Figma using GPT-3 natural text language processing? And then can you imagine how that would work in collaborative mode? Can you imagine how that would work over time? That would be incredible. Now, some of you might be out there being like, oh man, you're starting to go there. They're going to take our jobs. Oh man, we can't let the machines take our jobs. Artificial intelligence has definitely disrupted a lot of industries already. When you pair artificial intelligence with robotics, you have much more efficient assembly line manufacturing in the automotive industry. Other industries that are starting to use artificial intelligence for pattern recognition and medical application and creating much more nutritious foods and creating new drugs and new compounds. These are areas of vast thinking that requires some amazing minds to be able to put a lot of time, attention, and effort over route and routine areas. And if we could use machine learning to take that time and the route repetitive functions and basically speed them up a million times fold, then we free up our minds to actually work on the creative problem-solving issues. Now, when I was coming up through the industry, every time there was a new tool that came out, it was always met with derision. I remember in particular, Squarespace came out with a logo design tool a number of years ago. I was saying 2014 or 2015. And oh my God, did Twitter blow up about it. Every designer was so pissed off at this logo design tool. And it was the talk of the week. It was trending on Twitter for a while, and after a week, nobody cared. But oh my God, we made a tool that democratized the logo design process. Oh, we're going to be put out of jobs. Why would they do this? That's terrible. And there was so many different arguments. No, it's not going to take our jobs away. The logos it creates is basically like clip art. Or, no, it's going to democratize design so much that people aren't going to value what we do as designers. And other arguments were like, think of the people who are using this. Do you really want them to be clients? So much attention and energy given to it. And this wasn't even a machine learning artificial intelligence tool. This was just a tool to help make logos. And after a week, nobody fucking cared. After that, I haven't even heard of Squarespace's logo maker. I don't even know if it's still around. I don't care. I don't know anyone who uses it professionally. We all got in a tizzy about it. Other areas that designers get pissed off about was, well, look at, you know, Figma and Sketch. Here's a whole bunch of tools that came out that weren't Adobe products. And, oh, we can't use something that's not Adobe. And there were so many people who were saying, oh, we need to use Adobe products because they're the best. They all work on everything. That's the new standard. And other people were like, well, they don't have these tools. We should use Illustrator or this. And that's just so much back and forth. And I think for a lot of designers, a lot of individual contributor folks, there's this fear that certain tools are going to take away our autonomy, democratize our work so much that they devalue what we do as a professional. And this goes into more than just being a professional. Someone who's good with a tool. Anyone can use a hammer, but knowing how to use the hammer correctly and when to use it, that's what you're paying for. So whenever I would see these arguments about tools and new gadgets that designers have at their disposal, and there's an uproar about it, I'm just like, who fucking cares? Doesn't matter. So either you get with it or you don't. And those that are helpful, they will stand the test of time, and they will be useful, usable, and used, and until they are retired and something else better comes along that better meets our needs and expectations. So when you see design tools being out there, it's such a ridiculous notion to get in such a big argument about what should we be using as designers. And artificial intelligence, I feel like, is in the same realm. I feel like artificial intelligence is going to enable us to do more meaningful work, with the caveat that we don't destroy ourselves with artificial intelligence. We use it appropriately. Unlike Sketch or Figma or Adobe or Squarespace's logo creator, machine learning tools are a lot more powerful and have the opportunity to create some amazing work and also some horrible outcomes. So many pattern recognition programs that ingest photos are starting to become racially biased. because the photos that it's being fed and the words that are being associated with it are projecting a particular viewpoint of minorities. And with other organizations that are using artificial intelligence along with surveillance technology, it's starting to create a biased view of people as well. They don't look like us. They are others. So when you add othering to your design tools, are we going to be creating solutions that only really answer a problem for one's particular community, one particular group of people? And we have to be very cognizant of that, because unlike a drawing tool or a logo tool, it can do a lot more damage than just having a shitty logo or being a tool that creates interfaces. So we have to be cognizant that the tools that we are using, are they going to be helpful and allow us to do the best work that we can? So we need to make sure that we take care of these tools. But to outright say that the tools themselves and that artificial intelligence-based tools are a danger to our work at the very least, I don't think that's the case. Now, mind you, I haven't heard too many people really talk about machine learning tools for designers particularly. However, the gentleman that was at the Generate conference did talk about GPT-3 natural language processing, and also showed us a really interesting project called UiZard or Wizard, Urizard. I don't know how to pronounce it. UiZard. Basically, using pattern recognition, you could take a drawing, a hand-drawn sketch of something, using your camera, and having this app, it would interpolate what you've drawn into a wireframe, using pattern recognition to be able to create that. And then you could take that wireframe into Sketch or Figma and use it. So imagine using a tool that has the pattern recognition for elements on a screen, checkboxes and, you know, radio buttons and inputs and hero sections, that allows you to quickly draw up everything and then upload it. That's amazing. That is something that's pretty cool. However, if we were then to add photos into it and we were able to do other things with it, are we going to be biasing the technology towards one particular group against another? And I really think about accessibility as a cornerstone to usability, that are we going to be creating tools that only the sighted can use, only the neurotypical can do? Does it take into consideration neurodivergence? Does it take into consideration how something can be utilized? So when you think about those things, you're like, yeah, we don't have to worry about Sketch or Figma doing that, but artificial intelligence-based tools could allow us to do types of work that is more far-reaching and much more interactive. It's important for us to understand that when we're utilizing these tools, we have to treat them as such and treat them well so that we can do really good work with them. Now, there was a great article that I read years ago about Majel Barrett and how her voice was recorded phonetically. And if you're unfamiliar with Majel Barrett, she is Star Trek royalty. She was married to Gene Roddenberry, and she has been in the original series, Next Generation, and every other Star Trek show back in the 90s. She was in the original series, Nurse Chapel. She was Lakshwana Troy in Next Generation, Deep Space Nine. And she was also the voice of the computer for the Enterprise and Voyager. Now, why do I bring her up? So her voice was captured phonetically, and she passed away a number of years ago, and her voice still lives on. I was just reading that her voice might be actually in the new Star Trek Discovery show as the computer voice again. And how they were able to do that was that they recorded her voice phonetically so that they can string together her actually saying things. Mind you, she's been dead for over 10 years now at this point, but she could still live on. And then if you can use that phonetic library of sounds of her voice and attach it to an AI-driven engine behind the scenes and train it on her voice and how she would say things, you could get a audio deepfake pretty easily. And deepfakes are one of the things that we do see cropping up more and more. You know, oh, look at this ability on YouTube. Look, we can see here. We can make Vladimir Putin say this, and he really didn't. We can make all these politicians in the United States say stuff that they didn't. We can bring Tupac Shakur back from the dead as a hologram, and understanding how he spoke and how his inflection, his vocal, you know, patterns work, you could almost create brand new songs with him. This is the ability that we have as design tools. And if we think only purely in the area of like screen design and user experience just in that realm, we're doing ourselves a disservice, because these tools will allow us to rapidly immerse ourselves in ideas and prototypes that we can quickly throw away and reiterate on over and over again. They're going to be much more full-fledged. When we start moving into areas where we can use artificial intelligence to quickly mock up a screen, a user flow based off of research, that doesn't mean that the designer will go out the window. However, it does free up the designer to think more carefully about what's being created, is it meeting the needs of the user, and what needs to be changed. So I see machine learning tools being enablers of designers to do the really meaningful work without having to do all of the repetitious kind of mind-numbing work that we have done in the past. Not to say that work is belittled or it's unimportant. It's very important, and we need our best people to be training these tools on how to do that work. And I see artificial intelligence being incredibly helpful tools for research. I see artificial intelligence tools being incredibly helpful to enable UI designers and UX designers to understand how a screen and interface is set up in a way that's going to meet the mental model of its users. And using the research that it has been collected with user experience researchers and market researchers, like, this wealth of information is going to be sorted and presented in a way that's useful for us to do our own work. And then as we start getting more into vocal interfaces and gesture control, we are going to be able to create new ways for people to interact and interface with tools, products, features, and services that before we weren't really sure about, we didn't even think about. So we have to be cognizant of what machine learning can do for us and be excited that we can possibly do these things, but also be incredibly responsible in how we set these things up. One of the areas that I was really concerned about this a number of years ago was I worked on a product that was using gesture control for individuals to measure how physically fit they were. Basically, through a number of sensors in the floor and cameras and other biometric sensors, a person could walk into this kiosk and do a number of different exercises. And based off of the sensor data, it would give you a profile of, here's where you have some strengths, here's where your weaknesses are. You tend to lean to the left. You have a very dominant right foot that you're able to really balance yourself on. You have pain in your shoulders, basically based off of how the sensors read how you did certain exercises. Now, all of that was well and good, and it was fantastic that we were using artificial intelligence to basically come up with a profile based off of hundreds of thousands of other individuals that were of similar base information about an individual. However, it was completely inaccessible to people who were disabled. If you were using a wheelchair, if you were using crutches, if you had a prosthetic, it was completely unusable for them. And what was happening is that we were feeding it data on people that had no physical disabilities. And I thought that was incredibly discriminatory, because what is normal? What is healthy? What are these words that we're trying to say? We were designing a system that could only work for one niche community. Now, you could go down the rabbit hole that wasn't in scope, and we would probably eventually do that at some point in time. Basically, right off the bat, the product wasn't usable for vast majority of people. This is the danger that we have to be cognizant of. And we were able to get some really great information out of this tool. However, it was only useful to a certain community, a certain niche group of people who were able to utilize this tool. And as design and technology are helping to create more equality, we need to be cognizant that when we use these tools, that we need to create them, train them, use them in a way that is aimed to create equity and not be gatekeepers. With that, I think that there's an opportunity for all of us as designers to be really leading the way in regards to how machine learning and artificial intelligence can be utilized effectively and responsibly, and through our partnerships with psychologists and other disciplines about how to utilize these tools. I think designers have a really interesting opportunity to help lead the discussion on responsible, ethical artificial intelligence and the tools and the value that it can bring for us so that we can do amazing work. And with that, I really appreciate you taking the time to listen to this episode. Everything, again, is from my head, my experience, not indicative of any past or present companies that I work for. It's all just my view and experience and thoughts on these topics. So again, I really appreciate you always taking the time to listen to me, and have a great day.